Well, I would like to express my thanks to Ray Baker and the elders here at Henderson for allowing me this opportunity to speak. I'm incredibly humbled to be up here, and I'm thankful for this opportunity. I'm also thankful for the guys that helped lead us in worship. All of these guys are some of my closest friends, and I'm really thankful for the influence that they've been in my life, and I'm thankful for them. Thank you, Landon, for leading that last song, How Great Is Our God. I have to say, that has quickly become one of my favorite songs that we sing. I love thinking about the message of it. I love thinking about how great our God truly is. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's such a simple statement. But have you thought about how powerful that really is? The fact that the God that we serve spoke everything into existence. The Lord said, "Let there be light," and there was light. By the word of our God, dry land appeared. By the word of our God, plants and trees and grass sprang forth from the ground. We serve a God that breathed out stars and planets and galaxies. By the word of our God, the fish of the sea and the birds of the air appeared. By the word of our God, all the land animals were formed. By the word of our God, man was formed from the dust of the earth. By the word of our God, in Ezekiel 37, a pile of dry bones became life because of his word. By the word of our God, Jesus Christ stretched out his hand over the winds and the waves, and he said, "Peace, be still," and they obeyed him. By the word of our God, Jesus called out to the dead man Lazarus, and he was resurrected from the dead. We serve an incredible God. A God whose words are powerful beyond our imagination. If you brought your Bible this evening, I ask you to hold it up just for a second. Do you realize that what you're holding in your hand, the same God that spoke the entire universe, spoke the words that you're holding? The same God that breathed into man the breath of life breathed every word in this book. The same God whose word could resurrect people from the dead spoke every word in this book. I want to tell you something that might come as a little bit of a surprise to you. My words can't do that. As much as I would like it to happen, my words don't carry that kind of power. You know, it took God about 200 words. We have about 200 words recorded of the creation. It only took God 200 words to create the entire universe. And if that much power can be fit into 200 words, think about the power that's held in the 807,391 words in this book. Here's the deal. Tonight we have a pretty difficult topic ahead of us. This semester we've been talking about unplugging. Unplugging ourselves from the distractions of the world and plugging our hearts and our minds into the one who created the world. And tonight our topic is how sometimes even religion can create distractions from a relationship with Jesus. And because this is such a difficult topic, and because God's words are all powerful, and because my words are not, we're going to be spending a lot of time in the Word this evening. And I'm going to try to speak to you as little as possible. So if you'd like to follow along, we're going to start this evening in John chapter 4. John chapter 4. Like I said, this evening we're talking about how religion can sometimes distract us from Jesus. And tonight we're going to break this up into two main sections. We're going to talk about two big distractions that religion can cause. The first one of these is that religion can cause us to just go through the motions at times. Let's read together from John chapter 4. We're going to start reading in verse 22. Just a little bit of context here. This is the story of the woman at the well, and we're all pretty familiar with this story. And the woman, she's just becoming she's just becoming to the realization that this could be the Messiah. And she's asking him several questions about religion and about worship. Now let's see what Jesus says. We're going to start in verse 22. The Bible says, "You worship that which you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers." Verse 24. "God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth." As humans, we love simplicity. We like to be able to wrap our mind around things. We don't like things that are uncertain. We don't like things that we can't just seem to grasp. And so, as a result, we try to simplify things. We try to make lists. We plan. And in most aspects of life, that's a very good thing. But we can get into a little bit of trouble with religion, and here's why. Because the God that we serve is not simple. The God that we serve is not fathomable. Our God is infinite. His ways are beyond our ways, and his thoughts are above our thoughts. And so there's what Jesus says here is there's spirit and there's truth. And I think it's a pretty safe assumption to say that we've got the truth part down pretty well, don't we? I mean, we as Christians have taken the New Testament apart word for word in an effort to find truth, in an effort to find exactly what God wants from us. And that's a good thing. But where's our spirit? Is our spirit, is our heart in the right place? Is our heart in what we're doing? Or do we simply go through the motions at times? I think this is especially a hard temptation for us at Fried Hardeman because we're constantly surrounded by good opportunities. Opportunities to go to chapel, opportunities to go to devos, singings, prayer groups. Seems like every night there's the potential to worship God. And that's a wonderful thing, and I'm thankful for that. But sometimes can we get into a routine? Can we get to the point where our heart is no longer in what we're doing? We're just doing these list of things for the sake of doing it. In Psalm 51, if you'd like to go ahead and turn there, it's where Seaver read for us today. Psalm 51. As you're turning there, let me just give you a little context about it. Now, I'm sure most of you already know this, but this was written right after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba. And David, he thought he had covered his tracks. He thought everything was fine until the prophet Nathan confronted him about his sin. And I think it's also worth noting that under the Old Testament, in the law of Moses, sin required sacrifice. I mean, the letter of the law requires a sacrifice, and there were various different kinds of sacrifices depending on what you did wrong. But I think it's with that in mind, it's interesting to see what David says here in Psalm 51. For the sake of time, we're just going to start in verse 16. He says, "For you do not delight in sacrifice, otherwise I would give it. You are not pleased with burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." This evening, I'm not here trying to downplay the necessity of truth. Truth is important. Jesus commands it. He demands that we serve him the way he wants to be served. But what I am trying to say is we shouldn't downplay spirit either. And too many times, I'm afraid our hearts may not be in the right place. And when David is pouring his heart out to God in Psalm 51, he says, "Lord, I could have offered you a sacrifice, but what you really want is my heart." Let's make that our prayer. We can do all these religious activities. We can have a checklist a mile long if we want, but if our heart is not in it, it's useless. It's one of the things that Jesus kind of rebuked the Pharisees for time and time again. If you just look through the Sermon on the Mount, it seems like Jesus is constantly saying things like, "If your righteousness does not exceed that of the Pharisees, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven." He says things like, the scribes and the Pharisees, they love to wear the long robes. They love to have the chief seats in the synagogues. They love to offer long prayers for appearance sake. They love to give generously for appearance sake. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus is really laying into the Pharisees hard. And one of the things that he says is, do like the Pharisees tell you to do, but don't do it how they do it. And what he's saying here is, the Pharisees may be teaching you truth. They've got that part. They may be telling you what's right, but their heart's not in it. Either they're intentionally trying to use this religion for their own gain, or it's an unintentional thing, and they're just going through the motions. Jesus really kind of sums it up in Matthew chapter 15, verses 8 through 9. He's actually quoting Isaiah here. And speaking of the Pharisees and the Jews, he says, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. What a sad statement. What a sad statement. Their hearts are far from me. Let's make it our prayer that that's never us. Let's make it our prayer that our hearts are never far from God. We're going to close this first point by reading a passage from Isaiah chapter 1. If you'd like to turn there, Isaiah chapter 1. We're going to start reading in verse 13. To me, this is one of the most astounding passages in all the Bible, just because of how frank God is with the people of Israel. And it's also one of the saddest. And I think you'll understand why once we read it. Starting in verse 13, this is the Lord speaking, and this is what he says. Bring your worthless offerings no longer. Incense is an abomination to me. New moon and Sabbath, the calling of the assemblies, I cannot endure iniquity and the solemn assembly. I hate your new moon festivals and your appointed feasts. They've become a burden to me, and I am weary of bearing it. So, when you spread out your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Yes, even though you multiply prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are covered with blood. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean. Remove the evil of your deeds from my sight. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Reprove the ruthless. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. That's such a sad statement. Here we have a group of people, the nation of Israel, who they're going through the motions. They're doing all the right things. They're keeping all the right sacrifices. But God says, I don't want it, because your heart's not there. Do you think at times he can say the same thing about us, both individually and collectively? Can he say, I hate your singing? Your heart's not there. Maybe he says, you pray to me, but I'm closing my ears. I'm hiding my face. I'm not listening, because your heart's not there. Or maybe he says, just quit taking communion. Stop it. Quit. I don't want it. Your heart's not there. Sometimes religion can become a list of actions. It can become us going through the motions. And that is a distraction from a right relationship with Jesus. Then the second and the final distraction that we're going to talk about this evening is that religion can make it easy to divide people and make it easy to cast judgment. We're going to look at James, the second chapter, if you'd like to turn there. James chapter 2. We're going to read verse 13. James 2:13. And it says, for judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. For mercy triumphs over judgment. Did you catch that? Mercy triumphs over judgment. Since we're here, let's read James chapter 1 and verse 27. It says, this is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father. All right, pause right there. Here's the biblical definition of religion. Let's listen to what it says. to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. I think for us, we might can learn more from what's not there than from what is there. Notice what this verse doesn't say. This verse doesn't say, pure and undefiled religion is this, that you have the right set of rules. Pure and undefiled religion is this, that you check off the right boxes every week. Here's what it does say. Pure and undefiled religion is about putting others before yourself. Pure and undefiled religion is about standing up for those who can't stand up for themselves. Pure and undefiled religion is having the heart of a servant, having the heart of Jesus. Oftentimes, I'm afraid that we are a little quick to judge. We're quick to judge other denominations for the things that they may be doing wrong. But how quick are we to show mercy? We may be quick to cast judgment on someone who's living a sinful lifestyle. How quick are we to show love? Even people among our own fellowship, we may be quick to cast judgment upon them because of something that we disagree with religiously. How quick are we to have the heart of Christ? And from a truth standpoint and from a doctrine standpoint, we may be 100% right about those things. We may be perfectly spot on. But if we examine ourselves and we don't have the heart of Jesus, then I'm afraid we're trying to take the speck out of someone's eye when we have a log in our own. See, mercy always triumphs over judgment. I think that phrase can single-handedly sum up the ministry of Jesus perhaps more than any other phrase. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Let's look at John chapter 5 as an example. John chapter 5. In this passage, we have Jesus and his disciples are walking along, and they come across this man who is paralyzed. He hasn't been able to walk, the text says, for 38 years. Let's pick up in verse 5. And a certain man was there who had been 38 years in his sickness. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, "Do you wish to get well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I am coming, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Arise, take up your pallet and walk." And immediately the man became well and took up his pallet and began to walk. Now it was the Sabbath on that day. All right, let's pause right there. I want you to try to put yourself in the situation. I want you to imagine that you are a first century Jew. And just throughout your daily business, you pass by this guy that's lying. He's a beggar. And you pass by him every single day for 38 years. And one day when you're walking by, you see Jesus approaching. And you've heard about Jesus. You've heard about the miraculous things that he's able to do. And so you stop what you're doing for a little bit and you see what's going to happen. And sure enough, Jesus heals the man. He tells him to arise and take up his mat. How do you think you would react? Do you think you would be shocked? Could you believe your eyes? You just witnessed a man who couldn't walk for 38 years. Hop up off the ground. Would you glorify God? Would you become a believer in that very moment? Let's see how the Jews responded. John chapter 5 verse 10 says, "Therefore, the Jews were saying to him who is cured, 'It is the Sabbath, and it is not permissible for you to carry your pallet.'" Wow. See, sometimes following Christ looks a little bit different than following religion. Or how about John chapter 9? John chapter 9 is without a doubt one of my favorite passages in all of Scripture. It's such an amazing story. We're going to start in verse 1. John chapter 9, and it says, "And he being Jesus, and he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" All right, let's pause right there. To me, this is just like the last passage we read. This is a very sad response. Here is a real man with real problem, a real man with a real struggle. And the disciples are so engulfed in their religious way of thinking that the only thing they can think about is making this into some theological debate. A real man with a real struggle, and all they can think about is their doctrine. Sometimes following Christ looks a little bit different than following religion. If we keep reading, I wish we had time to read this whole story. It's a long one. But Jesus ends up healing the man. And long story short, the man ends up in the synagogue where all the Pharisees are. And the Pharisees, they're shocked to see this man because, I mean, they had seen him. You know, he was blind, and at first they didn't even think it was the same guy. After confirming it with the man's parents, they found out that this truly was the guy that was blind. And after questioning him, they found out that Jesus was the one who healed him. And the conversation shifts a little bit, and all of a sudden, they get extremely furious at Jesus because he healed on the Sabbath. Things start to escalate a little bit, and they get so mad at Jesus that they throw this man who was cured out of the synagogue. It would be the equivalent today of us excommunicating someone from the church. He is gone. He is never to re-enter that synagogue. And one of the beautiful pictures that this story paints is what happens next. He gets kicked out of the synagogue, and the text says that he went and found Jesus and worshiped him. Brothers and sisters, may we never, ever get to the point where Jesus is no longer found in these walls. May we never get to the point in our religious thinking that someone has to leave this building to go find Jesus. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Sometimes following Christ looks a little bit different than following religion. How about John chapter 8, just a few pages back? This is a story that we're all pretty familiar with. John chapter 8. This is the story of the adulterous woman. This woman was caught in adultery. The Pharisees, once they found out that she had committed adultery, they grabbed her and they drug her to the feet of Jesus. And they said, "The law of Moses says that we are to put this woman to death. What do you say?" Jesus bent down. He didn't say anything for a while. Finally, he looked up and he said, "Whichever one of you has not sinned, I give you permission to throw the first stone." He looks back down, kind of doodles in the dirt for a little bit. One by one, the rocks drop from their hands. The text says, from the oldest of them all the way down to the youngest. And Jesus looks up again and he sees no one there. And he asks the woman, "Did no one condemn you?" How about that? It's almost like Jesus is surprised that they actually admitted to sin. He's like, "Is no one left to condemn you?" She said, "No one." And he says, "Neither do I. Go and sin no more." Mercy triumphs over judgment. And aren't we glad? Aren't we glad that mercy triumphs over judgment? Because here's the deal. I am that woman. You are that woman. We were before the feet of Jesus condemned. We were at his feet in direct opposition from God's law. And here's the thing. The Pharisees were right. The law of Moses said that she was to be put to death. Leviticus 20:10. says that whoever commits adultery should be put to death. We were that woman. And it's almost as if Jesus doesn't even have enough judgment in his heart to stand over us. So he bends down and gets on our level. And he says, I don't condemn you either. Mercy triumphs over judgment. One more example, and the lesson will be yours. Luke chapter 19, we have the story of Zacchaeus. We're all familiar with the old VBS song, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a wee little man was he. Here's the thing about Zacchaeus, though. He was absolutely hated by the religious leaders. He was a tax collector. Tax collectors were known for being liars, cheats, and thieves. They wouldn't even eat with these people. They wouldn't even be seen with people like Zacchaeus. Even people who didn't necessarily consider themselves religious hated Zacchaeus. They viewed him as a traitor for collecting taxes for Rome. And I can just picture the scene. Jesus is walking down the road and Zacchaeus wants so desperately to see him. And I see him, he's trying to stand on his tiptoes, trying to see over the crowd. And that doesn't work, so I can just see him trying to push his way through the crowd just to get a glimpse of Jesus. And I also picture the religious leaders just pushing him back to the outer circle. They're saying, get out of here, sinner. You don't deserve to be even near this man. So he climbs up in a tree. You got to love his dedication. He climbs up in a tree. And Jesus stops what he's doing because he notices this. He says, Zacchaeus, come down from there. I'm going to your house today. Can you imagine what the reaction would be from the crowd? Can you just imagine what the religious leaders would do? I just imagine them going dead silent, maybe letting out a gasp. And the text says, finally, they start rebuking Jesus. They're like, whoa, Jesus, you don't understand. You know, you're not from around here. You don't know this man. This man, he's a bad dude. This man is a sinner. You don't deserve to even be seen with this man. And yet Jesus looks up at Zacchaeus. He looks him in the eye. And it's almost as if he's saying, Zacchaeus, come down from the tree. I'm going to the tree. Zacchaeus, please, I beg you, let me enter into your house so you can come to mine. See, mercy triumphs over judgment. Sometimes following Christ looks a little bit different than following religion. Every time we meet together, the elders offer a time for us to look inward, to look at our hearts, to look at our spiritual lives, to see how we've been doing. And it's a time where if you decide that there needs to be changes made in your life, you have the opportunity to come down the aisle, to sit on one of these pews, and together as a church family, we'll pray for you. If the prayer of one righteous man avails much, just think about what the prayers of every single person in this room can do for your spiritual walk. Think about how much power is in the fact that we are united in the throne room of God, asking on your behalf for strength. Tonight, I challenge us to see where we're at spiritually. Have we been going through the motions? We may be doing the right things, but is our heart in the right place? Or maybe we've been just a little bit too quick to judge others and a little too slow to show mercy, to show love. Tonight, if you don't get anything from the lesson, please get this. That at the end of the day, religion is about changing behavior, but following Christ is about changing your heart. And if you need the prayers of your church family, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?